Today's episode of the Sports Reporters Podcast is brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. At Buffalo Wild Wings, they'll admit that they go overboard with their limited time offerings sometimes, but they can't help themselves. Take the new signature sampler. For $15, you get wings and three shareable options like fried pickles or cheese curds. Then there's the aptly named over-the-top nachos, a literal mountain of crispy tortilla chips loaded with your choice of pulled pork or honey barbecue grilled chicken, corn, jalapenos, and more. Then top it all off with the new platinum margarita. Go overboard with Buffalo Wild Wings today. Wings, beer, sports, available for a limited time while supplies last. Please drink responsibly.
I'm Bob Ryan of Boston Globe and ESPN.
I'm Mike Lubega of the New York Daily News and MLB.com.
And I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press, and welcome to the Sports Reporters Podcast. We do this twice a week, Mondays and Fridays. Glad to have you joining us if it's for the first time. And speaking of first time, Washington celebrates the Stanley Cup for the first time in its history. Alex Ovechkin has the biggest monkey in the NHL off his back, because he was heading for a career as the greatest player to never win a Stanley Cup. That no more. Not only does he have a cup, he's got a Conn Smythe trophy. And the only downside to this wonderful story for Washington, in my view, is that it ended an even more wonderful story for Las Vegas, which would have been remarkable, but still a great Stanley Cup final.
Who had a bigger monkey on his back? I think Ovechkin's was much bigger than Kevin Durant's, and who lifted his last year simply because Ovechkin has been around longer. And last night, those scenes from Vegas after the game was over, that was sports at its most pure and at its most wonderful. Watching Ovechkin, who has been one of the transformative great players of his time, one of the great players of all time. Well, you know, it seems like a long time ago, but it doesn't feel like that when it was going to be him and Sid the Kid Crosby forever. And Crosby won, and Ovechkin didn't. And oh man, I don't know how even Knights fans had to watch those pictures on that ice after that game was over and be happy for number 8 of the Capitals.
And he started off right from the get-go in the playoffs, and as a deserved MVP. This was clearly, to me, it's easy to say now, isn't it, given that benefit, a wonderful benefit of our 2010 hindsight, but it was clearly to see that he was on that proverbial mission and that they were going to be in good shape. And this, to me, as a neutral in this whole thing, was a wonderful win-win scenario. I certainly empathized and was fully cognizant of the history of the Capitals, the two President's Cups that they won in 16 and 17, which led to nothing in the playoffs, and then the uncertainty going into this year, and a little bit of a surprise to win the division, and then the great uncertainty that I think most people, frankly, thought that Tampa Bay would win. And here they are. That was fine. And then, of course, how many, you know, you can't exaggerate the incongruous nature of the Vegas story and how cool that would have been. So to me, as a neutral, this was all good. And the games were compelling. And last night's game, that second period, five goals and then the drama. And I'll shut up with this one. What a goal by Devontae, Pelly. Oh, man, that was a Bobby Orr goal. That was a great goal, that tying goal.
Who this would be? I keep thinking about Ovechkin and playing a little whataboutism. This to me, what it would be like if Aaron Rodgers hadn't won his one Super Bowl with the Packers, and who's the guy now? Who is the guy? And it's difficult to do in baseball because, you know, Mike Trout cannot carry the Angels to the World Series the way a great player can in a 6-man sport or a 5-man sport. Who's the guy now? Who's got that monkey on his back now?
In all of sports?
All of sport?
Pro sports right now.
I don't know. Phil Mickelson in the Open? I'm just throwing it out there, Mike. I don't know.
No, this was a big one last night because of how great Ovechkin is and because of all the, and you know, Mitch, and you know this, the pressure becomes accumulative after a while, okay? It gets worse and worse. And by the way, he's getting older. He's getting older the way LeBron is getting older, except LeBron's got his titles. He's got his chops. Oh, no, this was, I don't know what the ratings are going to be like for hockey because they're never great. This was a great sports story last night.
I have seen this story in a parallel form in Detroit. It's interesting. It was 43 years for the Capitals that they've been in existence without winning a Stanley Cup, and was about the exact same number for the Red Wings when they finally won in the mid-90s. Since then, now obviously they had been great back in the 50s with Gordie Howe and all the rest of them, but then they went through that long, long drought, and I was there for all that stuff, and Steve Yzerman was kind of the version of this. He had played a long time in the game. He was the captain of the team. They got close. They had years where they won the President's Cup, just like Washington. It happens in hockey, by the way, all the time. It probably more than in any other sport. I don't have the proof in front of me, but anecdotally, I think no sport puts out President's Cup winners, meaning the best record in the whole league, and doesn't win the Stanley Cup more regularly than the NHL. The games in the NHL in the playoffs are always close, and there's a bad bounce here or there, and teams go home. So this had happened to Washington very similarly to that drought in Detroit, and they had had their nemesis. Detroit kept getting knocked out by similar teams. They had problems with Colorado for a while. But the same thing for Pittsburgh with Washington. And Ovechkin kept always losing to Pittsburgh, and that was always the talk. And then finally, they come through, and they win on the road. They had the whole feel. This whole thing, don't you feel that it, even as great as Vegas was, and I think because Vegas captured the headlines, people didn't really, on a national scale, pay attention to how Washington was doing this, coming back, winning on the road. I think they won all their series on
they
the road.
They did, Mitch, and they lost the first two games of the playoffs. And then I think, didn't they get their first win in like a double overtime game?
Yeah, and they had that save, which people are going to be talking about for forever, in game two of this series. Braden Holtby on, who was it, Alex Tuch? And that you can watch that forever. You can why he lays himself out. He's trying to preserve a lead. He lays himself out. There's not a Mr. Fantastic in the Fantastic Four couldn't have stretched himself better than that. And that wins them the game that really launches them on to then, you know, they end up winning four in a row and they go home. And there's always a moment like that where somebody has to do something. And I know that Ovechkin got the Conn Smythe, but if you gave out the Conn Smythe for a moment, Braden Holtby.
Holtby was going to get right until the end. I mean, it's a better story that Ovechkin gets it. I thought Holtby was going to get it.
Yeah, well, frequently they do, you know. Goalies often
and,
do.
And I'll tell you something else. This is a good thing for sports fans in Washington, D.C. They have suffered. They have suffered the heartbreaks of the Nationals. They've suffered through the Redskins, okay? And yes, they did have it good when Joe Gibbs was the coach and the Redskins were winning Super Bowls with three different quarterbacks. But, you know, they may have done more to drain the swamp last night than Trump has.
No, that's 25 years, Mike, you know. That it seems vivid to us, but it's been a long time since that Joe Gibbs era, and winning with the three separate quarterbacks and all that. It's been a while.
Was a good thing, Bobby. This was a good sports thing. And again, it for anybody who hasn't seen it or wasn't watching the game, go watch the look on Ovechkin's face from 0.6 seconds left when they go, there's one more face-off and they know it's there. And then when he gets on the ice, and then when he holds the Conn Smythe, and finally when he holds the Stanley Cup. Oh, man, that was cool.
You know, lost in this is the comparison between the two, Vegas in its very first year, Washington in its 43rd year. You know, each of them vying for that in a bizarro world where this flips and Vegas wins, it's the greatest story in sports. As good as Washington winning is, and as good as Ovechkin getting, and that's why, Bob, you're so right. There's such a win-win. It's got great storylines on both sides. But that Vegas story now kind of flitters away like a balloon that had the air come out of it. And Mike was joking before we went on the air about how Vegas, the biggest sigh of relief that you heard was from the casinos in Vegas. I mean, what they stood to lose on the I don't know what the odds were at the beginning of the year.
Mitch, on their team.
Yeah, in their town.
Okay.
I mean, they would have just had to walk all the money across the street to somebody. I don't know. but what was the odds at the beginning of the year?
Well, I think 500-1 is the one I kept
500-1. I mean, somebody puts down $1,000 on that and they lose $500,000. So they were a wonderful story, and it's, you know, because we just pay attention to winning in this country, it doesn't end with a win, and so it's not going to get the attention that it deserved. But to come from where they did, to in that town, that group of castoffs that they are, you know, led only by a goalie who accidentally got on that team because he was on a team with a guy who happened to be better, that's a movie. And of course, if they had one, it probably would be a movie by next year. But let's tip our caps to what Vegas has brought, and what the whole Vegas thing has dispelled about the city of Las Vegas and about the fans of Las Vegas and whether sports teams can work there or not. It's an interesting tale of two cities going on.
I can see baseball ending up there. You know, I can see baseball going to 32 teams and ending up there. The Raiders obviously are on their way. I think it's a matter of time before an NBA team ends up in Vegas. No, what the Knights did has provided a gateway to not just the Raiders, but to other professional sports. And you know, all of the things that they were keeping it out, you know, now everybody wants to legalize gambling all over the place. So it's become that issue has become a non-starter.
The story, I think there were three of us with accumulated experience of over 100 years of and all devoted sports fans. I'm going to say that for me, it's more appropriate that they lost. It would not have been as appropriate if they had won. It would have been a great, amazing story. We would have extolled it, but you know, somehow we all believe you still should be have to forced to pay some kind of dues somewhere, somehow. I mean, that's
well,
all. I mean,
you're right.
The thing that made this special wasn't just that it was an expansion team, but as you guys were just saying, it's about the fact that it was in Las Vegas and the trappings and how they embraced it and what they did with the pregame stuff and that made it special and how they Las Vegasized their way into the NHL in a way we couldn't even imagine a year ago at this time. Imagine a year ago we're having this conversation and trying to project what would happen with this franchise. Impossible. And as far as people being disappointed, of course they're disappointed, but come on, their lives were enriched, the sports fans of Las Vegas, for a year in a way that they never would have planned, and now they got, you know, it's going to be interesting next year to see how they bounce back from this.
And Mitch, do you, I mean, I've looked at it and I've read back on this stuff. I don't think the system was all that rigged in the Knights' favor. Obviously they got the benefits of the system, but I didn't think it was crazy. And I didn't think it was, I thought it was a pretty good business plan that the Knights not suck in their first year.
Well, that's the goal when they put these things together, although the expectation, Mike, is that they're going to suck. You know, let's face it. I mean, you're almost expecting that they're not going to do well in the first year. They're going to be Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They're going to lose almost every single game. So to do what they did, and Bob, you know, as you were talking, I thought, you know, he's right, because hockey, one of the arrows it suffers from the general sports fan, is that what's the point of the regular season? Anybody can sneak into the playoffs in number 8 seed and win the Stanley Cup, and so we nullify. Well, this would have magnified that even more. What's the point of the regular season? What's the point of the history of a franchise if a brand new team can be formed with castoffs and can win the Stanley Cup? In some way, not to the pure hockey fan, because the pure hockey fan gets the game. The pure hockey fan understands that it's a bounce here, it's an off a skate there, it's a great save like Holtby made, and that's what's beautiful about the NHL. But the casual fan just wants greatness to be rewarded, and it's the polar opposite in the NBA. You got the two best teams that everybody expected going at it with the biggest stars and all that, and then here you have the NHL with the group of castoffs that could end up winning it. It could kind of almost cheapen the Stanley Cup in the general fan's perception. So to that degree, it's probably better the Washington story, which is great in and of itself.
Oh, yeah.
All these years waiting, Ovechkin, all the. And by the way, Ovechkin's only 32. You know, you forget in hockey how young these guys start. They're not playing college hockey. If they're great, great players, they could be out on the team at 19. So 13 years in the league, but he's only 32. I think he's younger than Yzerman was when Yzerman finally won one, or pretty damn close to it. So, by the way, Mike, I was thinking about if you had had this discussion last year, I would have said Justin Verlander until he, greatest athlete who had a monkey on his back for not winning something.
No, no, Clayton Kershaw.
That's been taken care of.
Then it's Clayton Kershaw.
Maybe it's Kershaw.
Clayton Kershaw really has been the acknowledged best pitcher of his time, if Verlander hasn't, and still hasn't won the World Series. Listen, to put a bow on this, the great thing about this is Jimmy Breslin used to say, big guy wins or big guy loses, okay? They needed a leading man, and they had one. For all of Holtby's heroics, Ovechkin has been one of the faces of this sport for a long time, and he got to hold that cup last night. And that, to me, was the proper and best resolution to the NHL season.
And by the way, the first Russian captain to ever win the Stanley Cup, which surprises me, given the enormous presence of Russian players.
Oh, no, and good for him. This is a great Russian superstar in sports who's not trying to steal one of our elections, Mitch. I think that's important.
Today's episode of the Sports Reporters is brought to you by Away. Away was founded by two friends from New York, who sent Mike one of their bags, by the way, found themselves at JFK with dead phones, delayed flights, and a bright idea, luggage with power. Thus, the Away carry-on was born. It really is the perfect luggage inspired by true stories. They asked thousands of people how they pack, why they travel, what bugs them about their luggage, and then they designed a bag that solved a few old problems like sticky wheels and a few new ones like dead cell phones. Away uses high-quality materials while offering a much lower price compared to other brands by cutting out the middleman. You can go directly to them, and you can choose from a variety of colors and four sizes: the carry-on, the bigger carry-on, the medium, or the large for extended stays. All suitcases made with premium German polycarbonate. And you know German polycarbonate is better than the rest. Unrivaled in strength, weight, and impact resistance, the interior features a patent-pending compression system, which is helpful for overpackers. Squeezes the things down. Four 360-degree spinner wheels guarantee a smooth ride. TSA-approved combination lock built into the top of the bag to prevent theft. And a removable, washable laundry bag to keep dirty clothes separate from the clean clothes. Both sizes of the carry-on are able, to get this, to charge your cell phones, your tablets, your e-readers, anything else that's powered by a USB cord. Your luggage charges it. And a single charge on the Away carry-on will charge your iPhone five times over before you need to recharge your bag. There's a lifetime warranty, so if anything breaks, they'll fix or replace it for life. And Away also offers a 100-day trial. You can live with it, vibe with it, travel with it, Instagram it. Instagram it. And if at any point you decide it's not for you, you can return it for a full refund, no questions asked. Free shipping on any Away order within the lower 48. Away's carry-on sizes are compliant with all major U.S. airlines, so they won't stop you at the gate and tell you you got to recheck it, and you can maximize the amount you can pack. If you're in town, please be sure to visit the Away store in New York City. And here is a special offer. Our listeners get $20 off a suitcase. All you have to do is go to awaytravel.com/sportsreporters and use promo code sportsreporters during checkout. awaytravel.com/sportsreporters to get $20 off. Use that promo code sportsreporters during the checkout.
Now, if you go to that store, Mitch, if you go to that store, I would advise you to look for the black model that I have. That, to me, is just the best.
Stop rubbing in that you have one of these, and we don't. I don't. Meanwhile, I had this beautiful segue set up because checkout, and it may be checkout time for the Cleveland Cavaliers tonight from the NBA. How about that? From the NBA playoffs, and perhaps checkout time for LeBron James from Cleveland. We may be witnessing his last game in a Cleveland jersey, and I don't know. I start by asking you guys, did you expect Game 3 to go a different way? Did you expect this to be 2-1 coming in? Bob, your five-game theory is always that the Game 3
reverts.
Yeah,
I expected them to play very well and figured that they would probably win. And they did, keep – it was down – it was a last-minute game, and that they didn't get it done. When I really thought they were going to win is when Rodney Hood kept scoring. And say, well, this is the thing, the X factor that we talk about every night. Who, if anybody, can help? Where are they going to get this help? And he was providing that help that has been heretofore missing, and at least from him. And I thought that was going to be the story back in the third quarter, that Rodney Hood was going to be the lead sidebar for all those writers. It's going to be and a column even for Rodney Hood. Where you been, Rodney? Thanks a lot for showing up tonight.
But am I the only one who watched the last couple minutes of that game and kept saying, okay, LeBron James, be LeBron James. And I'm watching him pass off to J.R. Smith. I mean, the two biggest stars on Golden State are doing it, you know, Durant and finally Curry. And there were at least two times that LeBron could have kept the ball, taken it himself, forced the issue, and he passed off to somebody else.
Well,
yeah.
First of all, it's the eternal quandary
with him. You know, that was a flashback to the Dallas series. I agree. Yeah. And that vignette right there, those couple possessions, this is why he was criticized then, that he didn't represent, he didn't seize the moment as he should to recognize I'm the best player on the floor, I got to take charge. It's interesting that he reverted that, and his instinct from high school on, Mitch, I keep insisting, is that he's a team guy. And there's an inherent, you know, the limit, something in his head that he's a team guy, and I refuse to let him be criticized on that basis. That this is the quandary, but you're probably right. He probably should have taken it to the hoop.
Okay, but here's the thing about this game. Okay, and it speaks to how we have been spoiled by LeBron James, because Kevin Durant played a LeBron James game in all possible ways the other night. In many ways, it was the greatest game of his career. And imagine if LeBron ever had the kind of night that Steph Curry had and shot 3-for-16 in game 3 of the NBA Finals. We have been so spoiled by LeBron James, okay? And did he score all those points at the end of the game? No. But this is a night where he played 47 minutes, scored 33 points, had 10 rebounds and 11 assists, and it's like he didn't do the job. And to me, that shows where this guy has set the bar. Bob tweeted this the other day. Look at who Durant is playing with, and look at who, we keep going back to this, and look at who LeBron is playing with, and look at how little. And if by the way, if LeBron is drowning and Rodney Hood is going to save him, he's going under. Okay, if that's what we had come to the other night, where Rodney Hood had to save the season in Cleveland, then there's no season to be saved.
Well, I you're so right, Mike, and you raised something that I want to bounce back to you. LeBron James had the same night that Kevin Durant had multiple times in these playoffs.
Huh.
He's even better nights. Okay, right. He's scored 51. But Kevin Durant can go three games without having that and still be on a winning team.
Right.
LeBron James clearly cannot. Now, will LeBron James, can LeBron James, would LeBron James ever put himself in a situation where he would be a guy on a team of four guys? That's the thing. I mean, we keep talking about, oh, poor LeBron. Oh, woe is LeBron. And woe LeBron is. But LeBron puts himself in situations where he ends up being the guy, or you know, he controls the whole team. That he is the coach. We all know that. He would have to sublimate his ego, his playing time, his production, all the rest of that, to be part of what Golden State is. I guess another way I'm asking this to you is, could he have gone to Golden State the way that Kevin Durant has gone to Golden State and sublimate himself that way? But
Mitch, he is not just the greatest player of this generation or any generation. He's the greatest teammate. And my answer to that is absolutely. And, you know, Zach Lubega said this to me the other day. He said, oh, you keep hearing, oh, he's got to stay in the Eastern Conference, okay? And to stay away from the Warriors. Well, how staying away from the Warriors worked out for him? You got to play them eventually. That is why I think it is a very viable thing that, in answer to your question, I can see LeBron James going to Houston. I can. And watching Harden dribble the ball and doing his LeBron things, I think LeBron is now obsessed with being on a team that can once again beat the Golden State Warriors. And the best chance for that, the very best chance, is to go to a team that's obsessed with beating the Warriors, and that's the Houston Rockets.
A couple of things for me. One is that, indeed, he played in Miami with two very, very, very good players. One a definite Hall of Famer, one a borderline. Wade is going to walk into the Hall when the time comes, and Bosch is an excellent player. So he did play with some quality there. So and we saw how that worked out. All right. Other thing is, and inherent in what we are saying right now, the three of us, about his not quote unquote, taking over in those last couple possessions is the idea that he frame him or anyone else exclusively on the subject of scoring. What makes him LeBron James, what made Bird Bird, what made Michael Michael, is that that wasn't the totality of their being. Otherwise, they're Carmelo Anthony. See, no, what LeBron James is he fills your stat sheet. If he didn't do that, he still did so many other things to put them in a position to win that game with rebounding and assists. He had, what, 13 assists. You can't laugh that off. It's like one night when in Bird's rookie year, I'm just giving an example of what we're talking about. He went 0 for 9 in Golden State. 0 for goddamn 9. He had 14 rebounds that night. He helped the team, you know, in another way. And LeBron's always got some other way to help over and above the scoring, but we don't want to make the fall into the trap. We are too sophisticated, gentlemen, the three of us, to allow that to happen. We can't frame him strictly by scoring.
Well, it's probably because we've gotten used to the Cleveland LeBron James of these last few years, where he is basically the top scorer every single night on his team. Mm. You're right, Bob. When he was in Miami, there were many nights where Dwayne Wade was the leading scorer and Dwayne Wade was a star and he was second. That was rare that he was third to Chris Bosh. And these days, I don't even know if the Miami configuration is enough anymore. You know, you might need four guys now. At least that's the reigning team that you're trying to knock off. But LeBron has become so big in the last few years. He's not the same guy he was in Miami. You know, when he, And maybe it's possible that he goes back to being that guy, but I've not seen that in sports. When guys get to that level of ego and level of performance where he is the man, the questions he gets after the game are the questions the coaches usually get. The way he talks about my guys and this or that, or he really will have to revert back to being, Mike, if he goes to Houston or I guess even Philadelphia, although he's going to be older than everybody by far if he goes there, he's going to have to revert back to, you know, go over and talk to Harden, you know, go over and talk to Chris Paul. I'm not going to get all the microphones. Can he do it? I don't know. We've seen it happen with older players.
As you say that, I'm thinking out loud to myself as you say that, and God, you're so right. I'm thinking about Bird. I'm thinking about Magic. They never got to that point. I'm thinking about Michael. God knows he never got to that point.
But the game hadn't been AAU'd by then. I want to go play with all the best kids. I want to be with the cool kids. Bob, that was that was completely different then.
Mike, you're so right. As a matter of fact, if you were to check it and you could archive, Bird went on record in his time. Now we're talking. He retired 26 years ago. Bird went on record in his time as saying that he didn't like the idea of people moving, that they should stay with their team, that they should stay through a thick and thin and all that. He totally dismissed the notion of putting together a super. It was an alien concept that could not even wrap his head around the idea of that putting together.
And by the way, before we leave game three, okay, and I was talking to Jeff Van Gundy before game three, and it was not exactly the same because there was no big comeback for the Warriors. This was eerily similar to the game three of a year ago. And you forget how game one, the ending of it this year may have changed this series forever, even though it's clear now that the Cavs weren't going to win. Okay. Game three last year with 3 minutes left in Cleveland, the Cavaliers were up 6 points and never scored another point in that game. The Warriors ran the last 11 points. And oh, by the way, who made the two biggest shots? Kevin Durant did, including a 3-pointer with 45 seconds left that finally put the Warriors back in the lead. And that was a really good basketball game on the other night. But it was so similar because as you got to the fourth quarter, even when it was still tied or a point or 2 points, you felt as if the Cavaliers were still hanging on. And then Durant puts them away and puts this final away in game three exactly the way he did a year ago.
Yeah. I mean, and that raises the question, will the same thing happen tonight? Basically just a rally cry from the grave. They know they're done. They won big.
Yeah,
in
if Kyrie
game four,
comes back and scores 40, Mitch, maybe yeah, like yeah. he did well, last year.
Right. By the way, the ghost of Kyrie and now Isaiah Thomas is trolling them on the internet. You know, maybe you could have used me. I don't even know if they put forth that effort tonight. I just think that there's a weariness to the same thing happening over and over. This is now going to be, you know, 3 out of 4 times that they lose. There is no, despite what LeBron James is saying about I defy odds all the time and blah, 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 I don't even know if they die in their swords tonight. Do they really want to get on a plane and travel back to Golden State? Now, you know, when I tell this to non-sports writers, they always look at me like, are you kidding? You know, they're athletes. They're trying to win. You and I all know that athletes know when it's over. They know when it's over. And there's that part of them that says, we're going to get on an airplane. We're going to fly out to another city for 3 days. They wouldn't play again until Monday, you know, be on the West Coast. Or can we just go home now? And not that they're ever going to say that verbally, but it shows up in their play, usually in the fourth quarter. And something tells me that we're not even going to see that last hurrah thing. I think LeBron James, the way that he spoke after Game 3, he was not devastated. He was talking about how great Kevin Durant is. And, you know, it just looked like a guy who accepted, I can't win with these odds. And if he's not going to have that transcendent game, I don't see them even getting a game tonight.
The unknowable thing about this series, whether it is a sweep or whether they rouse themselves and send it back to Oakland the way they did a year ago, is how this thing plays out if the Cavaliers had won Game 1. Now, the other team's clearly better. And Durant shows you that they're so good that they can win on a night when Steph Curry shoots 3-for-16, when the Cavaliers could never in a million trillion years survive that. But how does Game 3 play out? Even for Durant, the way he was shooting the ball the other night. I'll ask you guys this. If the series is 1-1 and the Cavs have a chance to go ahead.
No, good question. Good point. We'll never know. I mean, that game one is ending is significant. I hope that when the history of this is written, that people take it into full and proper account and give the Cavaliers, who will have gone down to defeat in probably 4-5 at the worst, at the best, I mean, the benefit of the doubt. What the what if is if they get that call and things transpire. Yeah.
Well, I do think it would be significantly different. I think they come back from Oakland 1-1, doing what they already, you know, wanted to do, basically stealing home court. They come out and the place is even more on fire than it was. Let's face it. Last game was like, all right, we have to win this one in order to still be in the series, you know, versus, okay, we're back home. It's 1-1. Let's take control of the series. That's a whole different mentality. There's no desperation involved. Even if Golden State had won and went up 2-1, so all right, you know, we won one out there, they win one here, and then tonight's game is takes in the sort of atmosphere that the other night did. So, Mike, you're right. I mean, look, Kirk Gibson's home run in 1988, you know, one at bat, changed that whole series. You know, and that's why there, you know, was
argument
one, for him.
You're absolutely right, Mitch.
It changed everything.
One. Yep.
Changed everything. Demoralized the other team, and they ended up winning, even though Gibson wasn't even a part of the series after that. And
hey, by the way, just a quick aside. I don't know if you guys know. Mike, you may know, but I don't think, Mitch, you would have a reason to know, that Gibson's in town with the Tigers right now in Boston as part of the broadcast crew, and he and Eckersley have sat down
for a
thoroughly delightful chat about the whole thing.
Mitch, I've used that home run. There's another Game 1 home run that completely altered a World Series once, and that was Eric Davis against the Oakland A's. He hit one into the broadcast booth in dead center against Dave Stewart when Dave Stewart was one of the best pitchers in the world. And the A's, it was like they had been hit in the first round of a fight and never recovered. It can happen in Game 1. I'm not saying it would have happened in this series. When you know, we have seen all of the Cavaliers' flaws played out against these three games, more than we saw in the run-up to the NBA Finals. But it's fair to say how the history of this series changes if the Cavs hang on. And I'll tell you something else. But whether it's a sweep or not, whether it ends up with the last two finals between these teams being a five-gamer and a four-gamer or another five-gamer, this has been a pretty magical time in the NBA to see two teams play each other in four straight finals with that kind of talent in the room, but even before Kevin Durant got added to the Warriors.
Yeah, it's anticlimactic, obviously, the way it's going to end, and I think we're all pretty sure the way it's going to end. Although, if for some reason they took the next two, it would really add something to the lore of this. I think, though, do any of us believe that he's going to return to Cleveland? given the situation
No, I certainly don't.
We're all now in agreement that this is a done deal. He's played it out, and I don't think anybody in Cleveland would blame him.
All right, Bob, let me ask you this. Bobby, let me ask you a question. In a max contract world, is there something Danny Ainge could ever do to add LeBron James to Gordon Hayward and Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and all those and Kyrie
and a guy named Kyrie Irving? Yeah,
I don't see how you do it without sacrificing Tatum. I mean, I don't understand, and I don't want to do that. The other possibility that people are floating, because it is a talk show topic here, somebody leaked something that's got everybody a Twitter about LeBron and the possibility of coming to Boston. One of them was trading Kyrie back and keeping Rozier. I don't know, but I just know as a fan, I'm speaking as a fan who has fallen in love with this group, this team. It's my guys now, my young kids. I feel like I got some kids. I want to win with these guys. No offense, and you know how I feel about LeBron, and I'll do the speech at the Hall of Fame for him. I'll be fine. But I don't need to win with him. I want to win with this group. So that's me. I don't want to mess up this team by tearing it apart to get LeBron.
We have to recognize that we don't know all the pieces that can move around on the board once he declares that he's willing to move. It happens in ways that you just don't know, be it via trade or via some guy deciding to opt out of a contract or whatever. But all that matters at this point is that we are watching the final games of LeBron James in Cleveland, and it is a much different exit than the last time, the press conference, the South Beach comment, leaving the guys in his hometown. And I think he makes a very strategic move because I think he's worn out. And as admirable as it was, I think it had to kill him to sit there in a press conference to talk about how great Kevin Durant is when he knows that Kevin Durant can now take the rest of the series off and still win a championship. Whereas LeBron James, has to do that every single night. And Mike, we started the conversation with this, and you were very correct in pointing out that all the hosannas thrown at Kevin Durant, you could throw the exact same hosannas at LeBron James every single night in this series. And I'm sure the part of him that has an ego and has pride says, enough already. You know, I'm not relying on Rodney Hood and J.R. Smith and Kyle Korver if he ever decides to show up in this series. And Kevin Love, who, last comment on this, and then we can go to the Colangelo thing if you want to talk about that. But how many damn times do you bring Kevin Durant up with LeBron James or somebody else on him and fall for that stupid little pick at the top of the key, and now it's Kevin Love on Durant? He can't guard him. He can't guard him, and they keep doing it over and over and over again.
I kept waiting for LeBron to just go be the ball defender on Kevin Durant, but it never really happened, Bob, in any sort of meaningful way in the series.
No,
well, he keeps getting picked off.
No, the whole thing hasn't happened the way I thought, and I confess, I was a very, 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 very big booster of Love, and I really thought that people were going to see something. And I still think that his greatest asset they never exploit well, and that, of course, is the outlet pass, and because that's the dodo bird of sports now. But anyway, I thought he was going to really have a bigger impact than he's had overall.
I hope they win. I hope the series. I hope they, if nothing else, they make the Warriors win at home. Today's episode of Sports Reporter is also sponsored by Mattress Firm. I have a hypothetical question. Don't answer out loud, or those around you will think you're odd. But who doesn't think they're getting enough great sleep and would like to score big with a mattress upgrade? Well, Mattress Firm is here for you to do just that. Whether you're sore from a game of pickup soccer or haven't played sports in years, they have a mattress for everybody and every budget. And right now, when you use the code PODCAST10 at mattressfirm.com/podcast, you can take an additional 10% off already low prices. Mattress Firm has more than 3,000 stores nationwide, meaning there are no road games for finding a perfect bed and the perfect price because they're near you. And they'll deliver it to you on the same or the next day for free. We've used them. Talk about delivering in the clutch. They're like if baseball's best closer took Mattress Firm. And you can even sleep on it for 120 nights to make sure it fits like a glove. But Taylor and I were passing one at the store in our town the other day, and she said, that 120 nights, does that mean we have to sleep at the store? And I said, no, honey, it doesn't. Head to mattressfirm.com slash podcast and take 10% off today and start sleeping better tomorrow. They always have the perfect game plan in place to ensure you the best mattress for your body and budget. Well, in a hardly surprising resolution to an extremely weird controversy in Philadelphia, General Manager Brian Colangelo has lost his job because of these burner Twitter accounts that were associated with him. By the way, guys, do you think Brian's wife has recovered from that bus that he kind of threw her under? Because does anybody believe that Brian Colangelo's wife somehow knew all of this stuff on her own, all of this information, and decided to share it without sharing that she was sharing it with her husband?
The only thing we can hope is that he ran it by her before he went public and said, look, this is, I'm trying to save my job and our job. If not, Mike, it is one of the single, it's even dumber than the accusation itself, than the charge itself.
Yep.
Okay. That's all.
It's truly weird. I mean, this is, let's just lay out what this is for listeners who are kind of, you know, vague on this story.
Yeah, go ahead.
Here you have a very successful executive, the, you know, part of the architect of the process. He finally, you know, he's an executive of the year. He's worked the front offices. He's managed to work the losing system into a winning system. He's turned losing into an art
he's
form.
He's a child of basketball front offices because of
That's
his father.
Right. His dad, he's got the pedigree. He certainly has grown up in a world where criticism of the front office is part of the job. His dad dealt with it forever and a day. Why on earth would he feel compelled to answer his critics or to criticize his own team by, now here's where it gets weird, either he told his wife, you open these accounts, because, you know, I can't, it could be traced back to me, but you open them. Two, his wife is such a basketball fan that she felt compelled to open these accounts and answer some of his critics. Three, he's feeding her information saying, say this about Joel Embiid and say this about this guy and say this about this guy. And oh, let's read these critics together and let's respond to them through these different accounts. Any one of one, two, or three is so out of place. Given the job that he has and the expectations that you would have for a guy like him who's been in basketball his whole life and doesn't need to worry about what the clowns on Twitter are responding or saying about him, and yet not one, not two, not three, but how many is it? Five different accounts that they ultimately traced? And then she erases her phone before the as if that's going to make a difference, you know, because they can go trace all this stuff. And they literally hire a law firm to go investigate all of this. It is one of the weirdest. You cannot find a reason. You keep saying, well, why did this matter to him or his wife so much that they had to put out this kind of sensitive information? And he ends up losing his job in a team that's finally going to go forward after all their years of going backward.
Mitch, as Buck Showalter likes to joke, okay, he says, I'm not paranoid. I'm just extremely alert, okay? and when you look at this, this has to do with the and this expression I have another time, but you know what I mean. This is rabbit ears on steroids, okay? And I may be still naive about social media and Twitter and all the rest of it, but what was one thing that struck me about this story is this how little it takes? A couple of burner accounts. Did they actually think they were going to change the conversation about Brian Colangelo and Sam Hinkie, his predecessor, and Masai Ujiri and Markelle Fultz? Is this, you know, I know we live in the bot world where there's these viruses that try to plant seeds of doubt and controversy and all that stuff. But seriously, and I'm asking this question seriously, is this how little it takes to change a narrative? Is that possible?
It is. I mean, I just can't wrap my head around it, Mike. As long as this has been going on, I just to try to comprehend how a guy at that stature and a guy not just anyone in that position in general terms, anyone in that position is beyond comprehension, but even more beyond that comprehension is that it was him. I mean, with the pedigree, Jerry's kid, the accomplishments he's had himself, the where Philadelphia is right now is on the rising stock, the growth stock of the NBA. I can't comprehend getting involved in anything like this for the stupid purpose of answering the public.
Well, let's take his words and as a cautionary tale in this process, because what there is to be learned from this, if what he's saying has any truth to it, and I'll read you what he said. I vigorously dispute that my conduct was in any way reckless. Her, meaning his wife, her actions were a seriously misguided effort to publicly defend and support me. And while I recognize how inappropriate these actions were, she acted independently and without my knowledge or consent. Further, the content she shared was filled with inaccuracies and conjecture, which in no way represent my own views or opinions. While this was obviously a mistake, we are a family and we will work through this together. Number one, good luck with that now that you just threw your wife under the bus. But number two, we are in a sports world where I even know just close to home when Justin Verlander was pitching for the Tigers now with Houston, Kate Upton was constantly tweeting about him and defending him. And remember when the MVP vote came through and all the rest. Same thing happens with Matthew Stafford, the quarterback here, and his wife. There are wives and girlfriends and mothers who tweet on behalf of their husband or son or boyfriend that clearly you can go too far. Because if any of what he said is true, and if she was really doing the, you know, I'm the wife of and how dare you say that, look at what kind of trouble it can get you in. Look at what kind of, because clearly husbands and wives talk and they do know information. And so any girlfriends out there, wives out there, whatever, who are listening, watch this as a cautionary tale. Now, number two, what is your responsibility? And this is an interesting question I throw out to you guys, because this isn't going to be the last time this happens, Mike.
Well,
what is the athlete or executive's responsibility for his partner, spouse, mother, or whatever's tweets about him and his reputation?
And wasn't there a milder form of this story with Roger Goodell's wife sort of defending her husband or trying to do it anonymously on Twitter? But I'm reading the New York Times story about this, okay? And the longer you read, the worse it gets. One of the phones that the firm collected, the law firm, Paul Weiss, Rifkin, picked to investigate this, belonged to Mr. Colangelo's wife, Barbara Bettini. Before turning it over, according to the firm, she apparently attempted to scrub it of data by resetting the device. It hindered the investigation, the firm said in a statement, but not enough to derail its findings that Ms. Bettini had created and operate the accounts. Now, again, it is an awfully big leap of faith to believe that she was actually doing this on her own without her husband's knowledge and that she was aware of all of this inside stuff that came out in these burner accounts.
Agreed. I mean, it's just hard. It's strange. I think the phrase, it's strange credulity. As much as I'd like to believe Brian Colangelo, and particularly since I feel that I'm a friend of his father, it just strains all credulity.
But to put an end on this thing, I mean, Mike, what you just said and what you just read, that's the kind of stuff from murder trials. That's the kind of stuff from government investigation.
They Rico tried to burn the phone.
Yeah, they tried to destroy the evidence, and we have to go into the forensics and go search for the data that's up somewhere in the cloud somewhere because the actual phone has been burned. This is FBI and CIA and murder investigation stuff. And it's all about basketball rumors. It's all about whether a guy's trying hard or not or wants to get out of his contract. And the fact that they had to hire a law firm and go scrub phones. And look at the world that we're in here now. This would have been incomprehensible 20 years ago.
Mike, what do you think Red would say?
Red Auerbach?
Yeah.
He'd say with saltier language than what Mitch just said, what a blankin' world. That's what Red Auerbach would say. By the way, today's episode of Sports Reports is also sponsored by, the Colangelos could think about this, Simply Safe. It's important to protect your home with a home security system. But how many home security companies are actually thinking, how can we protect your home and your privacy? That's what I love about Simply Safe. They obsess over details like no other home security company. Here's an example. Simply Safe has a camera you can control from your phone, but they want you to protect your home and your privacy, so they came up with this brilliant idea, a privacy shutter for their camera. Now, Simply Safe wanted you to be able to hear the shutter click so you know it's closed. They wanted to have it light on it, a light on it, so you could easily tell when it's on, and they needed it to work for the entire lifespan of the system. So Simply Safe got to work testing different metals and hinge designs for months and months. The result, an effective home security camera with a thin, lightweight aluminum privacy shutter that will work every time. It's that kind of attention to detail that sets Simply Safe apart and keeps your family safe. Simply Safe isn't just home security. It's home security done right. Check out Simply Safe today at SimpliSafe.com/sportsreporters. That's SimpliSafe.com/sportsreporters to learn more about Simply Safe today. SimpliSafe.com/sportsreporters. It is time for our parting shots. And you know what? I'll go first today. Kevin Durant, who really was so brilliant in Game 3 for the Warriors, same as he was, and as I pointed out, in Game 3 a year ago when the Warriors were throwing the Cavs down a flight of stairs in those last 3 minutes, has announced, stay with me on this, guys, that he's decided to forego the opt-out clause in his original contract with the Warriors and stay with them. Well, my first reaction to that went something along these lines. Where was he going? I wonder what the interior debate was for Kevin, if there ever actually was an interior debate. Do I want to remain with what is already one of the greatest teams of all time, or do I want to see if there's a better situation for me somewhere else? Kevin Durant, who's as good as everybody except LeBron, is a made guy now in pro basketball. They said he couldn't win. He's about to win 2 times in a row, and looks like he might keep winning. Seriously, where would Durant go if he left Golden State? Real Madrid?
Bob Ryan.
Tom Brady spoke for 4 minutes at the Patriots mini camp yesterday. Some say he said enough to make them feel better about where his head is and where his relationship with Coach Bill Belichick and the entire Patriots organization is. Others say he didn't say enough to make them feel more assured that he and the Pats are totally simpatico. I say, if you're worried about 2019, 20, 21, or beyond, stop! He is going to play for the Patriots in 2018. He's going to be fine. Even if he deteriorates 10% from last year's MVP level, he'd still be in the upper echelon of NFL quarterbacks. Now, do I think it will all end happily in Foxborough? No, probably not. There is another woman equivalent in the Brady-Belichick relationship, and that is Brady's training guru, Alex Guerrero. It's a juicy story, but it is not a story for 2018. It's a story for the future. Unfortunately, there is talk radio. The story will not be put in proper perspective. Hey, welcome to 2018.
The family gathered. They watched on TV. They heard their guy's name called. And then they had dinner and went back to their business. The MLB draft is far, far cry from the NFL version. Chances are you didn't even know it took place. I spoke with the number one pick, Casey Mize, a pitcher from Auburn, who the Tigers chose with their top selection. He was happy. He knows he'll be getting some money, around $8 million. That's what's slotted for the number one pick. But when I asked what happens next, he said, well, I finished playing with my college team and then a couple years in the minors, I guess. There wasn't even a hint of him coming to the big team. Maybe we'll see him in Detroit in 2020. And he's the number one pick in the draft, which just goes to show you the difference between a league that develops its players in the minors and a league that relies on college to train them up. Casey Mize wasn't in New York hugging a commissioner, pulling a hat on as fans booed or cheered. The draft itself was broadcast on the MLB network, and they managed to do the whole thing 40 rounds in less time than it takes to show the 7 NFL rounds in the draft. And oh, by the way, Mel Kiper was nowhere in sight. How peaceful. That's going to wrap it up for today's version of the Sports Reporters Podcast. We do this every Monday and Friday, and so that means we'll be back in just a couple days. And by that point, we'll see where we are in the NBA championships and with the French Open and many other things. Until then, on behalf of Mike Lupica and Bob Ryan, this is Mitch Albom saying, have a terrific weekend.